This podcast is brought to you by Formkeep, form endpoints for designers and developers. No iframes, JavaScript embeds, or CSS overrides. Try out our sandbox mode before you buy at formkeep.com.
It's all orange.
Yes, it's a good sign. It's good funny signs. Because orange is typically associated with bending, or I mean, it's not. What I'm trying to say is that it should be green.
I think that's the color for like audio things, right? I don't know. Maybe.
I see. I mean, to be honest, colors don't mean much in the grand scheme of things.
They mean a lot in context, though. The sure. Context of the audio program might be different than what we're used to.
Right, but I'm trying to say that like in UI design, as much as we'd like to believe that green means good like everywhere, that's not necessarily the case.
Right.
Also, yeah, like
it's in context.
What do you do when your brand color is red? I've dealt with this several times.
Like, you mean like Thoughtbot?
Exactly. When your brand color is red and you want your call to actions to be red to match that brand color, and then all of a sudden like you end up in a forum or like somewhere with a cancel button. So it gets quite tricky because submit
becomes...
You
make the cancel button green.
Yeah, that's not a good idea, I think. Yeah, but I think it's interesting. I've dealt with several times Thoughtbot, but a few other things as well that have like, you know, red or right. Orange or like, you know, a warm color that's close to red. It becomes super tricky to use red to signify that something is canceled or deleted or whatever.
Yeah, the other thing that's tricky is that with red is that most color blindness turn red into brown, so you lose that color and it blends in with other colors. So you have to be, you know, very vigilant about using red.
Yeah, never rely on color alone for accessibility reasons. I always think this is something that a lot of designers like just overlook, especially like when you have two labels that are one green and one red. There's no underline, not labels. I meant icons, because labels you can still read and understand what they do. But when you have just icons and you use color also or state, when you have like a button that the only way to know what's happening is through color, I think it's not very accessible.
Yep.
Speaking of Thoughtbot and red, Thoughtbot.com right now is not red. It's a lot of blue.
Yeah, that's the hero right now is blue because that's the client color. So we're experimenting with that, where the main hero that we're calling out, the case study that we're calling out, we're using their branding in that hero instead of ours.
So we're shedding our identity and wearing that of our clients.
Right. We're embracing that of our clients.
Yeah, I can get on board with that.
One of the things that we've fought with in the past is the Thoughtbot colors are like a dark gray, very dark gray, and red, and a bright red. So how... And we've very rarely gone outside of that brand. And it tends to be overly masculine and very unfriendly. So we're trying to break away from that.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand. Especially like the Thoughtbot red, I think changed a couple of times, and it's often it became lighter.
Right, it's become lighter and more saturated.
Yeah,
over
exactly.
Time.
Exactly.
I think every designer that touches it does the same thing, which is make it a little lighter, a little more saturated.
Are we going to just end up with like white over time?
Well, I think we might end up with like hot pink.
Well, actually, the current logo is white in the current page because the backdrop is blue.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So is our thinking that those will be rotating every n number of days or just like on every refresh?
I think what we'd like to get to is every refresh that you'll get a different one.
Yeah. I tried earlier to refresh like 6 times and I always got the same one. So
yeah, we haven't implemented that yet.
because sometimes like with those random things, just because it's random, you might end up with the same thing 5 times. Mm-hmm. And you could, it's still random. It's just that it randomly showed you the same thing 5 times. But after the 6th, I was like, you know what? Maybe this is not implemented yet. So now add into the, typically the, like web designers, they often like resize the browser window, but now you also have to refresh and resize the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually I like the feature in Safari where you can hit Command Option R and you get the responsive mode. You don't have to resize the browser window. You know what, when resizing gets really tricky is when you have 2 monitors and the edge of the browser is one of the edges or the right edge is next to your next desktop. So when you try to resize, your mouse goes over to the next one. So it gets really tricky.
I did not know about Command Option R.
It's really cool.
That is very awesome.
It's my favorite. You can resize also within the window. So you can have these predefined like iPhone, iPad, whatever.
Yeah. Chrome has also, this like, too.
Yeah, but I found the one in Chrome is harder to access, and also I don't think it looks as nice. I like the design of this one. Just visually, it looks good.
You like the background blur?
Exactly. It looks good.
Yeah.
In general, I feel like Safari is a better looking browser, except for some areas, like when you have a dark website, and since the status bar is translucent, so it becomes a bit murky, but overall, I think the UI is good. But so how have you been?
I've been pretty good. How about yourself?
What have
you been working on?
I'm starting to feel the vibes of summer, so that's good.
Does summer come early in Stockholm?
Not really. It's typically the late.
Same schedule.
But I just, whenever I see this, we have had an amazing week here. Weather, like it's clear blue skies, temperature is good. It's not too hot, but it's not cold either. I see a lot of people with t-shirts, but I still keep my hoodie. And I like summer in general. I like summer. I like summers. Well, except summers in cities where it gets really humid and rainy and all of that. Maybe not that summer. What I've been working on? Well, I've been working on one of the landing pages that we're going to have on the thoughtbot.com website. We're thinking of like having different different pages for different services that we provide.
Yeah, I think we talked about those last week because I was working on the main services page that listed out everything.
Yeah,
so it's kind of funny. We've like swapped places.
Yeah, so I'm working on the iOS development page right now. Since I think I can do a lot done without much external help. So I thought I will... No, I mean, by external, I mean without bothering others a lot.
So I think in general, the place where we're running into the biggest roadblockers, I guess, are with copy. I think you could probably do a lot of the copy for...
Exactly. So that was one of the things I was thinking. I can design anything, but if I'm going to be blocked by copy, I'd rather do something where I can come up with a copy because I hate lorem ipsum. It's not a hate. I cannot even work with lorem ipsum anymore. I banned it from my lingo. I still use it when I want to just try something visually, like in terms of like how much text can I fit in this box sort of thing. But I never use it in design mocks or anywhere. I just don't use it. I don't like it. So I wanted something where I can come up with some copy. Because like lorem ipsum teaches you to be lazy,
mm-hmm.
and also to be inaccurate in certain ways. Because you actually, when you put lorem ipsum, you adjust the size of how you can cut anywhere in that text and it's fine. So you get exactly the amount of text that it would fit in 3 lines that are perfectly aligned, and you just think, all right, I think my job is done here, except that you, the final copy will be like a line and a half, and then all of a sudden things will start looking weird.
Right. So, I think that's have we talked about like working with real data before?
We did, but not specifically lorem ipsum. I don't know. I don't care if we did. Let's just talk about it again.
No, I agree with you. The only places I tend to use lorem ipsum is for things like comments, where I want to see like what it looks like where there's a short comment and what it looks like where there's a really long comment.
Yeah.
Where it's like all user generated content. So I'll use alternating like one sentence and, you know, two paragraphs. So I can see, get a good idea of what the design looks like with both.
Yeah, that's a good use case, actually. When you want to see if you have a super long text, like how much of it can actually fit. I do use it sometimes like that, but sometimes I just prefer to write a long comment. So I would sit down and just like write words and punctuation. And because like the other thing that lorem ipsum gets you is that a lot of its words are like 4 to 6 characters long, and that's not English. Like a lot of adverbs are actually longer than that. So I don't know, like accidentally or emotionally, those are quite big words. And if you have a narrow space, those will wrap. So even that part, I think you should take it into consideration, especially if you're doing something that would work with different languages. But even within English, I think having English words is better than having lorem ipsum because of the visual structure of the sentence changes. So English tends to start with like pronouns, like I, you, or whatever, depending on the, like, especially comments. I think a lot of them would start with I think, or whatever. And you have to account for that as well. Like, how does this block of text look? Pretty sure you can find alternatives online that gives you random English words or sentences or even like passages from famous books and stuff like that. I would rather use those than actually lorem ipsum is the way we know it.
Yeah. I've also used real comments. So going online and going to like a forum that is associated with the content that the site is going to be providing and just copying and pasting comments from forums.
Just don't go to Reddit. Most comments are like 4 letters, stuff like that.
Yeah, but if that's the type of people that are going to be using the app, then those are real comments to be designing with. Yeah, I know. I think as much as possible, designing with real content is, or as real as you can make it, is best. I always found that names were the most challenging.
What kind of names?
Well, names can be really short, like
like people's
either usernames or people's first and last name. Like they can either be really short, like in Twitter you could have like a one letter, one character name. Yeah. And then like, you know, people's last names, you know, you could have someone with like a 3-letter first name and a 3-letter last name, or you could have, you know, very long names.
That's true. That's very true.
Especially when you think about people who have hyphenated last names.
Yeah. Yeah. Names are tricky, I think, because as you said, different cultures tend to have different structures. Like sometimes you have a middle name, sometimes you don't. Also, like a lot of like, for instance, Chinese names are not very long in terms of the number of characters. Mm-hmm. And you would find also a lot of other types of names that are super long. I don't know. I can't come up with examples, but that I've definitely seen super long names.
Aren't some Swedish last names very long?
Sometimes. Yeah, they are.
I've actually been dealing with this. And so I worked on a client project. It was a client that we had already had, and I was jumping back on. I've been off the project for a couple months, and they're adding a couple new features. And so I jumped back on for a couple days last week and this week, and they're dealing with people in the United States government. And one of the things that I have to design for is job titles. and for job titles for House and Senate, Congress people, they're really short. So they just say, you know, what state they're from and their party. So it's like New York Democrat, and it's just NY-D. So it's four characters. But then we also are designing for their staff members. So they have like chief of staff, and some of the job titles for the staff members get super long. So it's, you know, designing for four characters and designing for something that is a lot longer was an interesting challenge.
Yeah. And the more I do this kind of work, you know, this design thing, the more I feel like text is the hardest part in what we do. By text, I mean both visual, like, you know, layout and also like copy. It's really hard. I find like I spend a lot of time just working on tweaking the text and the size of it and the alignment of it and all of that compared to, say, I don't know, like the generic layout or like colors and stuff like that. I mean, you can spend a lot of time playing with those, but you can quickly hit that point when you feel like, oh, I feel good about this. Whereas text is like hitting that point usually is far further along. Like you might actually keep doing it over and over and over again, and you would still come back and look at it and feel like it's not exactly right sort of thing. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I actually made a bunch of typeface adjustments to some of the style of how the type was rendered on this project. Just coming back to it, I'm like, this is totally unreadable. Why did I do it this way? I think a website with good typography is so much more usable than a website with, you know, unthoughtful typography and a great layout. Like, I'd rather have one column and great type to be able to read and skim through the site than a layout that, you know, is really intricate and awesome, but they didn't put the same consideration into the type and how, you know, either how stylized and legible it is or how I can read through it and how the hierarchy sits. And there's so much detail in type and not just like a content driven website, like a blog or something like that, but also in the sites, the web apps that we build.
I think it's in apps in general, like even native apps. I think that web, like, type is still something you're going to be spending a lot of time on. Like, even if, like, sometimes you would just prefer to go with the system font, that does not make your life easier. It's just one less thing to worry about, but you still have, I think the nature of text is that it flows and also it's dynamic. So that is the hardest part of it, I think. So whenever you have text and something else that you want to align to that text, like say a form field or an icon or whatever, it's extremely hard to get right. Like, because like sometimes if your first capital letter is an R, so typically like a capital R is bulky compared to a capital I or L, or, and if you put an icon to its left, then it would look fine, but then the other letters would look a little bit too not like, you know, they don't give that visual balance you want. And the same thing happens when you have like a form field to the right of that label. Like, you want it to be vertically centered in a way, visually centered, not, you know, not set in vertical aligned middle. That sometimes doesn't cut it depending on the typeface you're using. And in general, just aligning anything to text is not as straightforward as, well, just center align this, or it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Yeah. You actually ran into this on a pull request, I think, that you did last week, where you were redesigning the photo for someone who wrote a blog post.
Yeah.
And whenever you have a circle on the edge of text, you actually have to bleed it out a little bit so that it visually looks aligned with the edge of the text.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not easy.
It's one of those annoying things that you have to like either set a negative margin to or however it's implemented. But
typically it involves adding those extra 1-2 pixels in the layout, mm-hmm. in a way or other. Like using whatever technology, calc or whatever. Like, even native Dart, you have ways to do that. But Yeah, I find text really hard to work with. But again, the thing is you can't do without it. So that's basically design.
Yeah, welcome to design.
Yeah, and the thing is a lot of designers try to avoid text because of this. Like, I think part of the trend of actually, this is something I just figured out maybe right now. This is a revelation. I think part of the trend of dropping labels from everything is because designers are not willing to do the hard work of making the text look good. What do you think?
It is a lot of the times labels are really difficult, I think. Putting the label as a hint in the label field, that's been fairly popular. I agree that it could be because they're being a little lazy.
I feel like, yeah, it's a lazy approach to take. Like, yeah, just put four icons, or yeah, just put that in a placeholder. It's fine. And I feel like a lot of designs suffer from that. So that entire thing of label in the placeholder, it's so bad. I'm not saying I have never done it. I've done it so many times. But now when I look at it, I just don't... I think it's terrible because you fill the form and you don't know which field is what. And there was other, solutions. Like the sky labels, they call them. You know, when you click, it just hovers. But you still need to be focused on that field, I think. There are different implementations. A lot of them are you need to be focused to see it. Otherwise, you don't, which also not great because I want to see at a glance what each field corresponds to. And yeah, you might say, well, it's obvious, but it's not. Like, some things are obvious. But say I have two phone fields, one for home and one for mobile. And well, you would say your home and mobile look different, but sometimes I don't have a home phone, so I use my mobile phone for both, or fax or whatever. Those fields look the same if you don't
no
have
one
a
has
label.
A fax anymore.
But yeah, but a lot of forms still include it every once in a while. But what I'm trying to say is that it's not obvious. Address fields too. Like, sometimes you fill the address field and you want to make sure you did not put the city in the state. And in the US, you don't have this problem a lot because the states are a drop down. But in other places, states are not a drop down. So it's just another field. And you want to make sure you have everything in the right spot. Regardless, I think it's good to... Oh, and the one of... You know, the craziest one is when you have to... You know those forms to change your password? So you have three password fields. One is for the old one, one for the new one, and one to confirm the new one. And then they would have placeholders. They don't have labels. So you fill them, and you don't know which is which. Is the two first the new and confirming the new, and the last one is the old password, or vice versa? Because there are some places where you put the new one first, and then at the bottom they say, and to confirm, please put your old password. I've seen this a couple of times. I was thinking, yeah, this is terrible.
Yeah, I think forms in themselves are very tricky to design.
Why do you think they are?
My best guess is that, we try to add a lot of interactivity to them on top of what the browser offers by default.
Yeah.
And that interactivity is just probably making things harder. So overly styling inputs, hiding or doing some sort of, hover effect with the labels, styling, drop downs, check boxes and radio buttons. Like, all of these things are things that I've done, but they probably, in the long run, they might look better, but they probably make it harder for people to use the app.
Yeah, I do not believe that forms are hard. I believe that we try to make our jobs hard by trying to fight against the technology we use. Forms, there are labels and fields, and you have drop downs if you have multiple. I think with just plain HTML, you could get almost any use case. I think they get hard when you want these, for instance, autocomplete is one of them. Typically, it requires installing an external library, and also cases when you have date pickers. Those are not easy to make in an accessible way. There are some good ones, I think one or two, but most of the others I've seen are not good. And then you have to style them and all of that. I feel like that's the area where the browser makers should be competing with each other. Like, I have the best date picker sort of thing. I think that's totally should be the area where they compete, not us designers, because it's just like having to do that every single time and on all of that overhead of creating a custom thing, and it's just not ideal.
Yeah. I would also like to see the browser makers figure out a way to make it easier to style those in a way that like people won't totally screw up the usability of them, just by like being able to change colors, change typefaces, change size easily, I think would go a long way.
I mean, yes, they can do that. I believe that that's not something that you want to have branded. I don't think something that you want to brand. I think if they make a date picker, it should be the same across every website. Because as soon as you give the control to designers, and by giving control to designers, you're giving it to marketers and you're giving it to corporations, and just stuff goes downhill from there. Like
you could say that about the entire web.
No, I agree. I mean, yes, that could be extended, but I think for something as straightforward as I'm going to pick a date, I don't think that should be styled or customizable or whatever, because like you're picking a date and a time, and it's, yeah, you want to have maybe like, you have some control over it. And I think they should give you a certain amount of control over, do you show the month view? Do you show 2 months or 1 month? But as soon as you, yeah, like the same way you don't have to pick how my cursor looks. Like my cursor looks the same way across my system. And I think it should be applied the same for some of these web like form things. I think one of the things I'd like to see them compete on is actually the default look of websites. I think that's something that's like all of the websites now, like all of the browsers, they show websites in Times New Roman. I think that's a missed opportunity. You can have your own CSS file if you want, but what if like they decided
that goes back to our early conversation about typography, right?
Yeah,
just having better defaults.
Yeah,
but you would think that Apple would want Safari to render out the San Francisco instead of Times New Roman.
Yeah, totally. And I have a CSS file that I do exactly that. It's one line. It's like just use San Francisco, and it already makes default like unstyled websites look a lot better.
But how many unstyled websites do you go to?
Well, a few of my colleagues have unstyled websites. Mike Burns is one of them. And, and sometimes when I read like, man pages that are hosted online, they also tend to be unstyled. A lot of the geeky Unix stuff is unstyled. And I tend to read some of that every once in a while. I like doing stuff in the command line. So I obviously have to end up there, someday, but yeah, I think the browser makers could actually do some work there. Like, you know, just pick some good defaults, like good font, like spacing, maybe have a padding around the page so that it's always there, sort of thing. I think it already does. I think it's 1M, and we usually use a reset to remove it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're terrible people. Well, because we add our own later, but
it's also because they're not consistent.
They're also not consistent. Yeah, this is again.
So they're this you're is working a problem. Against yourself.
Yes, because like we want stuff to be consistent, but at the same time I don't think stuff should be consistent, to be honest. I think what they could do is they give you one line of CSS that you can include to actually negate all default styles. Like, don't use any... Well, that doesn't make sense, though.
Dash WebKit, dash appearance, none.
Sorry, I think what I just said doesn't make sense. You cannot negate all default styles because you still have to show something. So you have to pick a default font and a default whatnot. I don't have the answer to this. Like, I want better-looking websites that don't have CSS, but at the same time, if you're making a website, I want it to look the same. If you're designing one, I want it to look the same across browsers. Maybe we're asking for too much.
Yeah, I don't know if you know what you're asking for.
Yeah, I don't know either. To be honest, like sometimes I just wish the web was like CSS was never a thing and everything looked the same.
Then you wouldn't have a job.
I wouldn't have a job. That's true. I would have been doing something else. But at the same time, like it gives the like currently like a lot of the times I have trouble with web technologies is when people just override the defaults with something worse. And the default is like the page loads without JavaScript. And a lot of people decided that's not a good idea. So let's just have some JavaScript in there. And JavaScript is a vector of attack if people know what they're doing. So if you want a little bit of security, you turn it off and all of a sudden a lot of document only pages don't work anymore. I mean, apps are, let's say, well, let's give them the privilege of being excluded from this because, you know, they're interactive and all of that. But if you're just showing like content, I think it's, man, let's not go back to this discussion. I feel like we've talked about it enough.
Everything is a balance between keeping things consistent and usable and then trying to add style and design and brand so that you stand out from every other website. And we continue to, I think we'll always fight that battle of these things are used by however many people and they need to be easily used, but they also, you know, they need to stand out against their competitors. So how do you strike that balance?
It's a balance that we people need to strike, of course. But I think that we're, as far as standing out, what we're using these days to stand out is probably not what we should be using to stand out. I'll give you easy, you know, some hints on how to stand out. Make a good product. Have a good copy. Follow good practices. You will stand out because everyone is not following these things apparently. I think it's pretty easy to stand out these days. Just make a standard HTML page.
I don't think it's that easy.
Don't you think so? Like, don't you think that most websites nowadays like have a video in the background of the hero and all of that? Like, if you just had like a simple HTML page, wouldn't that make you already, you know, you make you a snowflake?
A snowflake?
Have you seen that website, brutalistwebsites.com?
Yes, I have. See, link to it in the show notes.
Those are websites that are standing out by falling back to what used to work. Well, some of them, not all of them, but
right.
That proves my point that if you
are those all of those websites easy to use?
No, there are some of them that have so terrible.
They're still choosing style or along that scale that we just talked about, they're leaning more towards style to separate themselves. Even though the style is brutalist and some might consider ugly, they're using style to stand out.
Yeah. I hope that most of these work without JavaScript. I haven't visited all of them. Some of them, they look pretty rough. Well, they look pretty brutal. That's why they're on this page. But some of them have really bad contrast too. I mean, I'm not saying that not having no styles is I'm looking at some of them now. Oh my god. The pinboard, you know, the pinboard design, I like it. Pinboard, the bookmarking service.
I don't, because I don't like the typeface.
Oh, come on. I think it's what is it? I think it's Helvetica, I think.
I don't know.
I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, it's Helvetica. What? Which part of Helvetica you don't like?
Sometimes the way Helvetica is used on the web is just kind of, eh. You gotta mold Helvetica to do the right things.
Well, I mean, yeah, you can not like Helvetica, but you can't deny that it gets the job done. I like Helvetica,
but I want to see it used the right way. Again, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the episode. Is like, you know, if you have good typography, the rest isn't that big of an issue, right? Like, good typography, good hierarchy, good contrast in your type, all of that awesome stuff.
Yeah, speaking of which, I think there's a trend now of type heavy or not type heavy. I think there's more focus on type and specifically on monospace fonts. I feel like I saw a lot of websites recently that use a monospace font. I'm not sure if you noticed this or not. Let me send you one example from a relatively known company.
We can add the link in the show notes.
I just sent it to you. And the company I'm talking about is it's a company called Apple. Like they make phones, laptops. Yeah. So they had this page, which is just text. And it's for the WWDC 2016. There isn't a single image. Well, actually, the text is an image because they don't want to... So apparently, this is the San Francisco monospace font. And they don't want people to steal it from the website.
That is awful.
So they include it as images. I hope they have alt tags. Let me see. It's a figure.
They do have... They have a background text image. Replace.
This is terrible. It's a background image without alt text.
Well, the text is in the HTML. They're using some sort of image replacement.
Oh, I see. I couldn't find the text, but...
Maybe they're using Swiffer.
Oh, yes, found it. It's text replace. Okay. So there's a span with the class text-replace with that stuff. And then, yeah. And I think this is quite bold from Apple. Like Apple, they like imagery and colors. And I mean, they still have colors, but to go all type. And this is not the only example. I've seen other things. And in fact, I'm working on a design that's for one of our products, internal products, that is almost entirely like monospace. And of course, I mean, I'm doing it because I feel like I'm just part of
the cool kids.
No, the thing is, when I do things and then sometimes just take a step back and think why I did the thing. Although the name of the service made this easier. It's called Career. I'm not sure I can give more details right now, but I just like the name made me think of postal services and of monospace fonts. So I went with that. But I've been to a couple websites this week alone where they use mostly monospace, but maybe because, you know, like I go to a lot of websites for developers, so maybe that's why.
Right. I would guess that's why Apple's doing that here is, you know, they're like, oh, these are developers, so we can, you know, use our monospace.
Didn't Elo use a monospace font at first?
I think they did. And my guess there is like it was more of a fashion thing.
Yeah.
I feel like there's like a few uses for monospace fonts. One is code or to represent code, which is like what WWDC is doing here. One is as like a fashion statement. So I feel like there's a bunch of designers that have used it as like, especially graphic designers,
yeah,
that have used it as like
vintage, maybe.
I don't know. I don't know what the thing is there.
It's hip, but it's a bit hip.
Yeah, hipster. I think like fashion is certainly the word. Hipster is probably a good word for it too. But they're certainly trying to evoke a feeling.
Yeah. It's typically used with like a 2-pixel thick border in buttons. I feel like this style is specifically like, you know, having a monospace font in a button that's square. And also the button is it's transparent, so you can only see the border.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that style was a lot more common last year. I don't see it a lot these days. You know what I've been noticing recently? And I think I'm also part of that trend, is pill-shaped buttons.
They're coming back.
They're back. And they're back like in a crazy way. They're everywhere now.
I haven't seen any.
I can say I've been taking screenshots as I go. Like I have a good collection of them right now. And I mean, probably you don't notice if you're not paying attention specifically to that, but if you are, like almost every call to action I come across these days is a pill button.
Are we going to get back to Web 2.0 and just have like these crazy gradients on the pill buttons?
Or are they flat? I'm not sure about the gradients. They're usually flat.
Okay. So they're not really a pill. They're like...
It's a pill, but without the...
It's a smushed pill.
Yeah. I don't know, but it's... Yeah, I'm not sure how to describe them better than that. It's those buttons with the 50%... Actually, it doesn't work that way on the web. With a very high corner radius, that it forms a half circle on the edges.
Okay.
If that makes sense, I call that a pill button.
Yep.
Yeah, they're back, Mark. I mean, I can show you the proof. We don't have them on the new Thoughtbot website, which is good.
Does that mean we're relieved, not cool?
I was relieved to not see them. I don't know. I have used one of my Mac utilities uses the pill button. And I used it just because I thought like they're sometimes they're nice. So the thing, this is one of the few trends that I actually am fine with. I kind of like them if they're used only in specific areas, and I used them in two of my recent designs for like action buttons and stuff like that.
Cool.
This was episode 26 of Tentative. Thank you for listening. You can find the show notes at tentative.fm/26. You can find us on Twitter at tentativefm, one word. And you can email us at hosts@tentative.fm. We're on iTunes. And if you listen to us and you enjoy the show, please rate us. And if you think there are things we can improve, please email us on the email address that I... just gave. And yeah, we love you guys and gals. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.